curated to encourage leaders at all levels to be their best selves and to bring a fresh, curious perspective to today's issues in business and culture. Our goal is to equip listeners with the resources to always move forward.
Brad Saar is going to come up and talk to us about, I think, something that's on all of our hearts. And it's this idea of talent, and it's an engagement. And what do teams and culture look like? I have a bias to think, well, it's Stryker. It's easy for them. But we all know things get harder when you scale up. Well, I can tell you right now why it matters. In a time of full employment in our community, a time when we're all struggling for labor and talent, we know, because the data is very clear and tells us, that companies that are highly engaged are 20% more profitable than companies that are not engaged. We know that companies that are highly engaged have a turnover that is 70% less than the turnover of companies that are disengaged. And with that, we'd like to introduce to you today's speaker, speaking on the future of team and culture, my friend and member of the board of directors of Southwest Michigan First, Brad Saar.
Thank you, Ron.
Thanks, Brad.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm honored to be here and really privileged that the person most surprised that someone would actually pay money to hear me speak is my wife. She's not here today, but we will give her your regards. This presentation took on a little extra meaning, if you will. Some of the things that we're going to talk about, a lot of the things we're going to talk about today, there are a couple founding fathers in this room, and I won't embarrass them now, but as I say to many of the past leaders of Stryker Corporation, on the shoulders of giants. So we are anxious to speak with you about this topic. We're passionate about it. We've been doing it a long time. I do have the following disclaimer. You can read through it and you get what you get, but the views expressed are my own, not necessarily of Stryker Southwest Michigan First. And as I just met my new friend, Carrie, you realize that our journey on this path is without destination. It's a boat that never arrives. So we're learning, we're growing. This is not advice. We don't have this offense perfected. It is a daily, monthly journey that we are on. It is, however, a testimonial on talent, strengths, and engagement. It's something we've done a long time, and we think we're pretty good at it. And it's a competitive advantage for us. You know, folks can steal your talent. They can hire your people every once in a while, but culture is very hard to replace. Culture is a sustaining organism, and we believe we do it pretty good. We put this mission on here, and I want to just give you a little backdrop on Stryker, but everything that we show regarding Stryker is not necessarily an infomercial on the company. It's simply to relate back to younger folks, high talent, high performing talent, want to be associated with a company that's in touch with their mission. They want to relate to it. They want it to be personal and they want it to mean something. Those are 11 very clear, short words in our mission statement that if you were to ask 36,000 employees in our company, every single one of them would know. We take it very personally, and there's probably three descriptors that you're going to see as threads throughout this entire message today, and that is together, driven, and better. It not only describes our mission, but it describes in many ways who we are and how we work. Winners want to work for winning companies. They want to work for dynamic companies. They want to work with companies on the move. So I don't show you this 38 years of growth to impress you or what have you. It's simply to say we are a growing, dynamic, vibrant company that changes rapidly. And we sell that to new employees and the younger folks out there that are looking to call perhaps Stryker home. We've been globally recognized. You'll see this is very diverse. It's just a smattering of some of the accomplishments we've gotten. It's simply to say, not only here in Kalamazoo, but in San Jose and in Australia and in Hong Kong and Amsterdam and places all over the world, we basically run the same offense that you're going to see today. And again, there are many outside references which recognize that we're doing it pretty well. We always tell our folks we're proud of that recognition, but we're not prideful of it. We're proud of it, but we're not prideful over it. It's a giving company. Our people want to be involved in bigger things other than profit endeavors. This is a global campaign that Stryker engages in. It's called Operation Smile. If you knew anything about cleft palate procedures, it's a relatively simple procedure. You can do it in 10 or 15 minutes. Many of these children are the scourge of their family and their communities. They're outcasts. And in a simple 15-minute procedure, using Stryker surgeon partners, our equipment, and a team of people that vies for those opportunities throughout the globe, we go out and make a big impact. And that's meaningful to folks. I put the corporate strategy on here, not to talk about strategy, but to simply convey to you the circled part at the bottom, that at the root of all strategy is what we call our talent offense. And that's really what I'm going to speak about today. We do talk a lot about strategy. We talk a ton about talent. And we believe that great talent trumps great strategy all day long. We're in the middle of college football season. There isn't a college coach in America that doesn't believe he or she can't win with the strategy they've put in place. At the end of the day, it probably comes down to are my 11 better than your 11 most of the time. And we walk around and think that. We think it's a pretty cool place to work. I've been there 25 years. I'm still thrilled to wake up and wear the flag, if you will, and go to see the people that I get to go see. Our mission is important. We improve people's lives. We have a lot of ownership in our careers. We don't spend a lot of time talking about things that we don't do well and what we need to do to fix them. We try and put really high talented people on great teams, and we try to uncover the unique giftedness of each person and have them draw upon their teammates to perhaps bolster an area of their own being that is perhaps not as strong as it is in another. So we get people to work together, and it works pretty well. Ron said it best, and I've learned a lot from being on the Southwest Michigan board, and he is a champion for this, but this body of people, these millennials, is a big group, and we got to figure out how to communicate with them, attract them, give them meaningful work, and connect with them. I generally don't like big group stereotypes. I don't like being a part of them, and I don't like describing others as that. But generally speaking, I think there's some commonalities between millennials, and you've read all the press clippings. You could do a Google search, and even before I came in here, there were thousands of hits on talent and engagement in millennials, how they want profit with purpose and mission with profit. And Ron would contend, and we believe here in Kalamazoo, that the younger folks want to live downtown. They want to be in the city, not around the city. And you're seeing a lot of building going on around here. But certainly it's a huge population, could make up 75% of the workforce by 2025. There isn't a person we speak with or hear from that isn't fighting for talent, and we are as well. And unemployment is down. The passive job seekers are the ones we worry about. They're not necessarily looking for a job, but the phone rings and an attractive opportunity comes up. We want to be the company when that recruiter calls or another company calls that says, you know what, I'm good. And I just heard a really neat story just this week. We held a seminar at our business out in Redmond, California, and our R&D leader out there was really disappointed. One of our key electrical engineering talents had announced he was resigning. He was going to go to Microsoft. We compete against Microsoft, Amazon, Boeing, all those big companies out there in tech Seattle. And he attended our seminar that a couple of our folks put on. And he came up afterward and he said, I'd like to retract my resignation, because that's the kind of company I love the way we're getting in touch with our customers. And that's exactly what I've envisioned here. So one example, but that's ideally what we would want to have happen when someone knocks on our employees' doors. What do you look for? I wanted to give you a little bit of insight into how we do it. You know, we talk a lot about engagement, but if you're trying to engage a mule, it's not going to run very fast. Talent is, we try and find people that know how to run really fast, whether or not they know the medical business or the nuances of our product line, because we think smart people can pick that up pretty quickly and go. So we spend a lot of time talking about this talent. What is it? We think it's the big differentiator. It's just this natural bent that each of us have. We were born with it. Parents get it more than anyone else. How can it possibly be that the same two children from the same mother and father are wired so differently? One is meticulous and detailed and puts lists together. You never taught them to do it. They just somehow did it. And the other one's sloppy and messy and carefree. And how can that be? Well, those are those pathways that they were born with. And we try and find out about what those pathways are. And and apply them at Stryker. We do believe we're relatively unique in this, that, you know, most of the traditional hiring is done on the right-hand side. What is your experience? Where'd you go to school? What are your credentials? What are your references? Those kinds of things. We tend to focus more on the left side of the screen. There's certainly roles within our company, human resources, legal, places where the law exists that you have to have a certain set of competencies. But I'm going to show you an example in a minute here of how we view talent and how we move it around the organization. So in sum, we focus a lot on that talent side, a lot less on the right-hand side of that circle. As a matter of fact, very few of our sales marketing folks actually have any med device experience. It's kind of an anomaly. And sometimes it's kind of a bias that we have going in that I don't know if we really want that because they've already been trained in a mindset. We just like kind of a virgin mindset of a high-powered person that's got a lot of get up and go. And then we teach them kind of what we need to teach them. And they do. There's a very good friend of mine who started the company at the same time. He was a roofer before he came to Stryker. He's been one of our best sales reps for 25 years in a row. Amazing story, but that's talent. Okay, here's what happens. When you hire somebody of high talent versus the more experienced person, the more experienced person depicted in that burgundy line that's going horizontal will give you, we believe, a better bang for your buck at the onset. Why? Well, because they know how to do the job. It's dangerous, though, because if that person has limited upside and limited talent, perhaps what you get at the beginning is about what you're going to get in a year, 2 years, 5 years. So we tend to focus on the person who's got more raw talent. And even though there may be some additional training required on the front end or time and investment on the front end, when their skills and their competency meet their horsepower, it's off to the races. And that's when you find the upside in those people. So we really pay a lot of attention to that talent piece because we think it has great upside. Some of you know this lady in the room, but we think she kind of epitomizes what we're all about. She started at Stryker 17 years ago. We've grown up in the business together. She started out, she's trained as a lawyer. She is a lawyer. She started out as a legal representative, liaison to both the medical and the endoscopy businesses out in California. She went to a couple of different spots. She was my HR partner back in 2008 when we started here. She left me in HR and she was the chief compliance officer of the corporation. So she was on Kevin Lobo's executive leadership staff. She came back after a maternity leave and we put her in charge of a whole bunch of departments at the medical facility and she just relocated her family. She's now our VP GM leader for a global $650 million business and she is killing it, just killing it. And that's kind of what we do. We don't say a lawyer's a lawyer's a lawyer. A lawyer can do just about anything. And you see how much she has moved around. We try and say to people, you can have 10 different jobs throughout the course of your career, all with the same company. And Ann does that really well. So you have great talent and you combine that with a certain skill set and these strengths emerge. And so we talk a lot at medical, again, not necessarily on what people don't do well, but this natural way of thinking combined with their skill set and how that manifests itself in strengths. The person who initiated that, again, is Brad at Stryker. And this offense, generally speaking, is attributed to Mr. Clifton and Strength Finders. I don't know about you, but this is a haunting question to us and to me personally. How is it that you have 10 people on a team and the same top three people produce every single year? Like the same three over and over, good times, bad times. And kind of the perplexing question is like, what if you could get a whole company of those three people in every role, in every position? And that's kind of what we've aspired to do. We're not there yet, but that's really what we think about every day. And that's what we benchmark in terms of our best. So everybody at Stryker, regardless of whether you're a finance, operations, HR, sales, marketing, what have you, we all go through a profile and that is benched against the very best that we have found at their position, the very best. And that's how we're evaluating them at the onset. So we tend to study and be fascinated by what's right with people, not what's wrong. You know, Strength Finders, many of you went through it. In sum, this slide is intended to convey we like the science of it. It's not a feel-good thing. It's not subjective to us. It's objective. And what it does is it allows us a common language to speak. You know what strength looked like. You picked up a pen today and you signed in with your natural hand. Put it in the other hand and try and write. Feel how awkward and clunky and uncomfortable that would be. You know these people. They're the ones in the elevators that you're riding up to the fifth floor and they introduce themselves, or they say, how was your day? And they're constantly engaging you. And strength finders, they call that woo. Woo people that have woo can't help it. And if you don't have woo, sometimes woo people make you crazy because they're just the life of the party. And typically you don't have two woo people in the same couple. Somebody goes to a party and likes to talk and kibitz, and the other person is more shy and reserved, but you know who they are. You know the folks that are the list makers and they stick to it. And they are the people, high achievers are the people that even if something was not on the list and they did it, they'll put it on the list so that they can cross it off. And some of you know who you are. And if you're skeptical, and certainly we need balance. And the beautiful thing about strengths is they all balance each other out. Strengths unfettered can become derailers. So we try and get people really comfortable with what they do well and also how those strengths perhaps manifest themselves to individuals and their team surrounding them. Because if they're not managed, weaknesses are fundamentally just strengths gone awry. They're strengths unchecked or unfiltered. And we're very cognizant of that. So in sum, you can read through. We use it as a common language. We use it to help develop people. We use it to help build diverse and strong teams with different skill sets. It's not a yes or no whether to hire people. Nobody has bad strengths. It's just how you use those, where you use those, and with whom you use those that may determine whether it's good or bad. All right. So it's a lot of fun for us. And it's a language. If you were to go into virtually any Stryker building throughout the entire globe, you'd probably go outside of my office. You'd see Brad, and then you'd see my five strengths, because it just gives us a little bit of familiarity as we walk around and we interface with each other. It's very helpful. You know this, Ron just talked about the engagement thing. Strengths, 3 times more likely to report having an excellent quality of life, 6 times more as likely to be engaged in their job. Ron just spoke, 70-some-odd% of the folks showing up to work every day are not engaged. What a shame that is. I must tell you, this is not on script. Growing up in the Kalamazoo area, being here since 93, I don't hear this so much anymore. But because of John Brown, many of you heard the stories. John Brown is a very hardworking man. It's kind of the DNA of the company that we come from. Every once in a while, I'll run in, like friends of mine, and they'll say, Brad, are you at Stryker? And I go, yeah, I still am. They go, oh, sorry. He goes, sorry. I go, sorry about what? Oh, you guys work so hard. I go, no, I'm sorry for you. I am sorry for you because I love my work and I love the people I work with. And I think the mission is important and nobody is pushing me to go to work. I am my own worst enemy. Nobody has ever told me don't go to my kids' ball games or hockey games or what have you. I am my own worst enemy because how I'm wired. But I feel bad for you that you don't feel that same way about your teammates. But that is what it's kind of what it's all about. The author of this story is a gentleman in the gray suit here to my right, and I'm going to brag on him a little bit because if not for him, I probably would not be here today. This is the medical division story very quickly. The point is, if you look to the left of the slide from about 97 to 2000, the medical division of Stryker was the place that careers died. If you got sent to medical, you've just been put out to pasture. That was not a high growth moment for your career because it just didn't perform many times. Jim Heath was part of the leadership team that was sent over from the instruments business, and he and four of his counterparts instituted this talent offense, which heretofore was not common for us. We didn't do things that way. We hired experienced people. We hired people with reputations. We hired competitors from other industries. And guess what? Same result. And we instituted the talent offense, and you can see what happened since 2000. It's As a matter of fact, it was back in that day, John Brown, our former chairman, I'm dating myself a little bit. Now we have clickers and PowerPoints, but John used to bring at the national sales meeting his tray with slides. He showed up for one of our sales meetings and during one of those dark years in the mid-90s, and his tray broke, or we broke it perhaps, and he said, it's broke just like medical. And he said, you better fix it or I'm going to sell it. You got a year to fix it or I'm going to sell it. We turned it around. You can see the impact of my leadership. I took over in 2008, this nice growth trajectory, and then look what happened. So I'm not sure you should listen to anything I say, but obviously that was the economic meltdown of 2008 was really difficult, and it was scary for us. We lost in the capital business at medical $100 million. The reason I share that with you is if you get great talent and you care for them and you listen to them and you engage them, even if it's really, really bad news, our engagement went up that year. It went up, which fundamentally said in our worst year of history, where we were on the cusp of layoffs and all kinds of things that Stryker just doesn't do, they felt better about their workplace than worse. And we're proud of that. But that's a function of and a byproduct of talent and engagement. And here we sit today, we're the recipients of $4 billion invested capital. So talent, engagement, performance over time does yield results, and this year we're projected to do over $2.2 billion. Why does engagement matter? You know why it matters. Absenteeism, safety, product defects, higher productivity, profitability. And this is kind of our model for doing it. And it was the case when Brad Black and Jim Heath were there 30 years ago, and it's still the case today. If you think of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, it's hard to be self-actualized if you're hungry. It's hard to be self-actualized if you're living out on the street. So it all kind of starts with those basic needs. And in the Q12, which is a tool of the Gallup organization to measure, at least in our world, engagement, it starts out with, I know what's expected of me at work and I have the materials and equipment. And everybody from the CEO's staff down to the floor employees to our sales force evaluates our leadership team and us and our organization on these questions. And I would contend it's the biggest tool for enterprise change that we own. It used to be the day I'd sit in on 75 of these sessions, every single sales rep, every single region in the country. We just can't do it anymore. But our people do, and those sessions take place. So they know we're listening. More importantly, they know when we follow up on something that they've expressed that we can do better, and we do it, we get high marks for that. So it's kind of this weird thing that we put leaders in charge, but this is a tool that we can use to make sure that they're staying responsible to their teams. You know the links, Q12 links to performance in sum, both from a sales perspective and operational perspective. The statistics and the science are compelling. You get better performance. Winning is fun. So we think engagement is fun. It's not a hassle for us. It's a ton of fun to make work more meaningful for folks. And oh, by the way, business benefits because of it. A couple more thoughts to you, and then we'll get to the panel. We just wanted to challenge conventional thinking. These perhaps are more medical nuances than they are Strykerisms, but these are, when we think about engaging talent and the kind of workforce that we want and the kind of communication that we want to have as a leadership team, we all know the golden rule. We've learned it from our mother and father. It says, treat others as you would like to be treated. We don't think that's necessarily true. You know, if you're really getting to know your team and you're really honing in on the individual and you're understanding how those individuals work together for the betterment of the whole, the golden rule for us is really don't treat others the way you want to be treated. Treat others the way that you want to be treated. Because the way that you want to be treated is different the way that you want to be treated, which is different the way that you want to be treated. So that's what we say mom's wrong. At least she's wrong at work. We treat others the way they want to be treated. Recognition. Very rarely would we send out a dozen Starbucks gift cards, a dozen certificates for a meal. We try in these personal relationships that we form to find out what kind of recognition is most meaningful to people. If you've never asked the people that you work with, ask them that. It's such a fun question. What is the best recognition you've ever got? You'll be fascinated from the response. So it's not uncommon for us that it's Cassandra, would say, you know, my grandmother was very influential in my life. She taught me my values. She did this. She worked hard. And you say, Cassandra, what's her address? I want to drop her a note. And so it's not uncommon for us, for her in that situation, for us to write a note to her grandmother just to tell her what a wonderful job you're doing and how proud she should be of what you're doing and the contributions you're making. Now, that's not right for everybody. Somebody might go, that's a little invasive, and that's okay. What we're saying is that recognition needs to be really personal and relevant to whomever you're giving it to. You say, Brad, someone asked me before the presentation, how big's your organization? They said, that's big. Well, I don't have a lot of people working for me. I work for a lot of people. That's really the way it is. We don't like ivory towers too much. And our folks don't take each other too seriously. And we crisscross boundaries of divisional lines all the time in terms of hierarchy. We don't have hierarchy. My job is no more important than anyone else's job. We just do different stuff. And maybe there's a different level of accountability, perhaps. But at the end of the day, we wake up every day thinking, how do we get these folks from the customer end happy, remove obstacles for them, put them in places where they're operating at their very best so that they continue to call this a great place to work. Trust is the foundational currency of all relationships, and it's something that we think about each and every day. We are not a company that when you get on board with us, we're going to give you a job description and a detailed list of how to accomplish that job and follow up with you on a day-to-day checklist. As a matter of fact, one of the questions that we ask for folks when they were evaluating is, you know, kind of what's your work style? Do you like big, broad initiatives and then figure out a way to get there? Do you really like to be held in a box and told what to do? And folks that are the box people don't fit real well with us because we tend to give people big, hairy, audacious go-gets. And then we say, you go. And Caitlin, this summer, I mean, my sense is that some of the feedback, she interned in our HR department. And my guess is they gave her some big goals and said, you go. She goes, well, I'm just an intern. We don't care. You're a smart body. We need you. We got a bunch of stuff we got to get done. So go do it. And we routinely hear that about our intern program. But trust is at the center of that. You can trust great talent. At the end of the day, profit, purpose, a higher calling. I think the younger folks, the millennials, want to be associated with something bigger than just the job. And I know that's the challenge that we all have in this room. And it's something we wake up to every day. And that mission, together with our customers, we're driven to make healthcare better, is very meaningful for us. Thank you for your time. Jim Heath said to me, if you didn't feel like you got your money's worth today, come see me and I'll give you a refund. Thanks for your time.
Thanks for joining us. We hope today's conversation inspired you to keep moving forward on your leadership journey. To connect with Ron, you can tweet him at Ron Kitchens or send him a message via ronkitchens.com. If you are listening via iTunes, please leave a review. It really helps us connect to you, grow our impact, and keep moving always forward.